Gareth Jones on Speed presents Questions That Need Answering. Number 1.
Does Isaac Hadjar drive a Renault Kadjar?
Questions That Need Answering. Number 2.
Shouldn't Franco Colapinto own a Ford Pinto?
Questions That Need Answering. Number 3.
Does Fred Vasseur have a masseur?
Questions That Need Answering.
Hello and welcome to what is an inevitable episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. Inevitable because F1's back. We just have to discuss it. When I say we, I don't just mean you guys listening to the show. I mean my great friend Zog and Stevie Sackin. Hey, boys, how are we?
Hey, pretty good, thanks.
Very good indeed. Yes, thank you.
You're still smiling, Stevie. Is that from qualifying or from practice or even back from testing?
Just the whole thing. It's just getting more and more interesting. I mean, the testing was fascinating, and then the practices and qualifying and the race. It's just building, and the kind of intricacies of what's going on with the new regulations are so fascinating. You know, slightly annoying in places, but we'll come on to that. But I'm just loving it. I'm just loving it, and loving having the chance to chat with you guys about it.
We've had a race now, cars racing against each other, and that pecking order does seem to be emerging, Zog.
Yeah, Stevie, as reflects his character generally, is a little bit more positive, I think, than I am after that first race about the new F1 regulations. But yes, the pecking order that we anticipated is pretty much what we saw in the race. You know, a solid group of four teams out front, which is Mercedes, Ferrari, McLaren, Red Bull. Then a middle pack that are, you know, fairly, you know, close-ish together, and Aston Martin and Cadillac bringing up the rear. I would say, though, that front group of four is looking maybe a bit more like 1+3.
Mercedes
is definitely the class of the field, but they had a pretty good scrap with Ferrari, you know, and Toto Wolff did say, I think, at the end of the race that he was anticipating a pretty good fight with Ferrari. I don't know. Ferrari certainly kept them honest.
For the first, seven or eight laps, we had continuous swapping of leader of the race between Mercedes and Ferrari. And there was one occasion during the race where Lewis Hamilton led the race. I know it was on pit stops and stuff, but I don't remember seeing that in so many years. I genuinely was anxious on the sofa here. And that whole thing of the cars swapping places constantly. Zog, I want to hear what your view on that is in a moment, but Stevie, what's yours?
Well, I mean, so fundamentally, I loved it. I was putting aside kind of what was behind the kind of swapping and the electrical, the battery stuff. It was exciting. It was great to watch. It was, you know, the kind of overtaking and back and forth. And I saw a statistic about the overall number of passes during the race, and it was double or three times what it was last year.
Mm-hmm. So, yep. Is that right?
So they absolutely achieved, you know, an objective with these regulations to make it more competitive and to make more passing happen. And it absolutely did. And it was a great spectacle. It was a great spectacle.
It was a spectacle. You know, the number of passes during the race, you know, they were the sort of the gross passes, but net position changes. I did a quick calculation. George Russell finished where he started at pole. Kimi Antonelli gained or lost no places in second. Isaac Hadjar was up one place until it all went very wrong for him. Charles Leclerc gained three. Lewis Hamilton gained three. Lando Norris made no change. Max Verstappen gained 14. But generally up and down the grid, it's about two or three places if you're really lucky. The lower down the grid, the more number of changes of places there were. But yeah, there was a lot of swapping. It's my turn to lead, now it's your turn to lead, up and down the field. But ultimately, it didn't make much change to, you know, who is in the faster car. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think if you've got a state of play where a pass for position tends to be followed, you know, later that same lap by a pass back, because two drivers have different energy harvesting deployment strategies, and, you know, and a lot of what's going on is to do with the battery and deployment of electrical energy, you know, that's really not much racing. It makes for a better visual spectacle than A following B for the whole race, but it's, I don't think that's what we really want to see. We want to see drivers controlling these cars, you know, at the limit. We want to see them, you know, absolutely wringing the last bit of performance they can out of the cars, rather than playing a canny game of strategy over a lap or a series of laps to maintain the battery charge at optimum levels for, you know, what they're anticipating happening over the next few corners. And I think we're seeing a bit too much of that. We're seeing a bit too much of racing where the drivers are battery limited rather than tyre limited, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, for me, I'm a little bit disappointed in sort of how these regulations are, you know, are working out. I'm a little bit apprehensive that this isn't really going to give us the kind of racing that we want to see. I totally get the argument that this is a different era of motorsport, and in order to reflect what road cars are doing, you have to have hybrid technology, and you have to have technology that has some relation to what road cars are doing, rather than being this, you know, racing only formula, a racing only kind of technology. If you want to get big manufacturing, if you want to get big money, and of course you can always have these, you know, niche areas of racing that don't have to have some relation to the road. And so what we're seeing is partly a result of, well, specifically you could argue wanting Audi to come into the sport, because, you know, the fact that we've got the MGUK only technology in the cars and no MGUH seems to have been almost entirely because the sport wanted Audi to come in, and that was something that they were quite insistent on.
Well, and they were courting Audi and Porsche, and who else was thinking about delivering an engine? Well, ultimately now Cadillac. And I guess that's for the sustainability of the sport, that they need to court the big money from your Fords and everyone else.
Yeah, sure.
And I actually, I'm the opposite to you on this, I actually really enjoyed the whole driver as resources manager thing that's going on at the moment. Because the difference between motorsport and, say, Olympic running or Olympic swimming is that these Olympians go out there and they go flat out as much as they can. If they're doing, you know, 1,500 metres or whatever it is, and they might hang back and then throw everything at the end, or they might make sure they've got an unassailable lead. There is a finite amount of energy that those runners have, and they work with that, and you get this, okay, who is going to be the best in the end idea. And for me, it's like when I'm swimming, I go and I swim 2.5 kilometers in an hour and a little bit, right, in a swimming pool, and I know I don't go into that swim flat out, because I won't do the 100 lengths I need to do. I will be knackered after 60 lengths. I can't. So I pace myself. However, I'm harvesting energy when I'm swimming gently. When I get to the turnaround and I kick off the wall, that's the point, like a Ferrari, where I actually put more energy in than anything, because I'm already accelerating. I think I'll maximise that and I'll be able to torpedo for half the length of the pool. So I'm doing that. I'm doing exactly what they're doing to make sure I get to the end and get there more efficiently than I had last time I swam. And that is part of the mental approach for drivers in F1, because what you've got to remember is that these guys are still driving, like you said, Zog, flat out at the max of their abilities whilst doing this engine management thing. I mean, that's like playing chess whilst running a steeplechase, isn't it?
Well, but I think we're seeing too much of, you know, at the end of long straights, the speed of the car dropping away. You can hear the engine note dropping. You can see the speed, you know, on the if you've got the data on screen, you can see the speed dropping. Now, that may be driving flat out within the constraints that they're the energy use constraints. I mean, I love the technology that goes into these cars. It's fascinating. It's wonderful. But I want to be fascinated by it, and I want to be excited by it, you know, kind of in between the races. I want to be thinking about all of these, you know, little esoteric technical stuff in between the races, not during a lap. I don't want it to be, you know, I think, I just have a feeling that at the moment, the balance of things is a little bit too much, I think, towards having to manage the energy in the car in a way that I think is compromising the racing. Yes, we're getting quite a lot of passes, and that's giving us, you know, a quick hit, you know, a superficial thrill. But I'm not sure that really the racing is everything that we could have. Maybe it's a question of too much electricity. Maybe that the 50-50 balance is too much towards, you know, they've just gone too far towards the electrical component over the internal combustion, and that combined with cutting out the MGUH is giving us this slightly difficult situation. And, you know, let's also recognise that quite a few of the drivers are not happy with it. Now, you know, it may be that in a few races' time, you know, as they get more used to it, and maybe as, you know, the teams are finding ways of managing and running these cars, you know, they're getting more experience with that, that the situation improves. But I'm not that optimistic at the moment.
Stevie, you're known for your optimism, and in our circles and others, I'm certain. You mentioned that it was a little bit annoying. Is that how you feel, or is that you're reflecting what other people feel?
Well, no. I think I'm more reflecting what other people think. I mean, listening, you know, I think Zoggy's points are totally valid. You know, I agree with the sort of principles of what he's saying, as do, I think, most of the drivers from what I've heard in after the race, I think, except George, who seemed to be very, very happy.
Of course he's happy.
But overall, I think, you know, the consensus, in the drivers was, you know, was pretty much with what Zoggy said. Yes, I'm a bit more optimistic and a bit more positive about it, simply because, you know, I think the changes have had a few effects. I mean, I think this, you know, the overtaking thing, that the fact that you can't just, you know, that the faster car doesn't just go to the front and then pull away, it has improved the spectacle. It did improve the spectacle, without a doubt. You know, what is Formula One for? You know, is this not supposed to be a spectator sport? It's there to entertain and to excite the audience. It's also there to bring in the manufacturers, to encourage these, you know, the top manufacturers to invest in the sport, to be part of it, and to kind of grow the thing. They're succeeding. Liberty are doing a great job with this. I won't argue that, you know, I think that these regulations are perfect, but I've enjoyed what I've seen so far. And you know, I would, you know, I'm happy to, well, I'm extremely excited for Shanghai next weekend, because I want to see more of this, and I want to see how this pans out over the next few races, because it's going to, you know, the drivers, certainly, you know, towards the end of the race, it was slightly less crazy. So, you know, I noticed a few cases where Max got stuck behind Lando for a while. And, you know, the difference in the deployment of electrical power clearly wasn't having the same kind of impact. And there were a few cases of that. Sorry, Sophia.
I was just going to say that, having been quite negative about it, here are some positives that I took away from that race. First of all, happy Lewis. You know,
hooray for that.
You know, whilst Ferrari may have missed an opportunity by not pitting one or both of their drivers under the virtual safety car when it came out quite early on, actually, you know, Lewis looked and sounded, you know, very upbeat at the end of the race. He was quick.
He was.
And, you know, clearly he and Leclerc are going to be able to fight Mercedes pretty aggressively in the races to come. Also, we are going to see a slightly different balance between the teams at different tracks, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the different characteristics of different circuits, you know, will mean that the pecking order is going to change a bit, and that will also be affected by the work that all of the teams are going to do to improve their cars over the season. Yeah, at the same time that I'm expecting Mercedes to be pretty comfortably on top for most of the time. And by the way, I've got a sneaking suspicion that they haven't even turned that engine up to 100% yet. I've got a sneaking suspicion that, well, you know, did they really seem to be, you know, that they weren't having a hard time in Melbourne, were they?
No, I've seen some data suggesting that you're right.
Really?
I think, you know, and that's without the, you know, planned development that they're going to have, planned improvements. But, of course, other teams are going to be improving as well.
Yeah. Fred Vasseur said this week that he expected by the summer to have cut the gap to Mercedes by half. Now, I hope he was allowing for Mercedes' own development in that equation as well. And he wasn't just saying, oh, we can find it, because Mercedes will just sprint away again, you know, fired out of their magic bow, as they are.
Vasseur's pretty canny, I think, you know. He's done a tremendous job. Well, you know, Ferrari are probably second best right now, and that's so he's done a very good job to put them in that position right now. You know, a big change in the rules, as we've just had, creates huge opportunities for teams to, you know, do a great job and do a terrible job. And we've seen Aston Martin do a terrible job. Ferrari, on the other hand, Ferrari and Mercedes have knocked it out of the park. You know, it's,
there are many AI-generated slop videos on the internet of Alonso continuing to run in the Grand Prix, and I mean run in full uniform. The car's broken down. He continues running around the track and passes a great number of other cars. You know, stuff of dreams. Aston Martin, well, they, in some ways, they did better than we were told they were going to do.
Yeah. They did better than expected. They almost got out of Q3.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's... yeah. And they completed a few... Well, how far behind was Alonso? Just look at it.
15 laps Lance was behind.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Stroll finished 15 laps down.
But they clearly ran the Grand Prix as a testing session. You know, they were not...
Yep.
In no way were they competing with anybody. They were simply trying to collect data and
agreed, yes. That's absolutely fair, Stevie. And they did more than do a few demonstration laps and then come into the pits, which a lot of people said they were going to do. So that actually wasn't a terrible race for Aston Martin at all.
I'm just looking. Alonso ultimately was classified 18th. Hülkenberg was classified 22nd. Piastri. We've got to talk about Austin.
Hulk didn't even start.
Yeah. That was heartbreaking. The car wasn't communicating with the pit and they couldn't get it going. That was terrible. But I feel for Oscar Piastri and I feel for Isaac Hadjar. Yeah. Who do I feel the worst for? Piastri.
Absolutely. Home race, and
it wasn't his fault.
Okay,
it wasn't.
Okay, and this is another thing, because it was an unexpected
surge of power,
deployment, surge of power. Okay, well, and this is another thing where I think we have to criticise the current state of the cars and the rules. Yeah, that Piastri, fabulous driver that he is, was caught out by a sudden surge of power that kicked him off the track on the formation lap. Verstappen,
in qualifying,
no slouch. Yeah, in quali, had his rear axle lock up on him very suddenly, unexpectedly, which kicked him off the track.
It's almost as if these things are difficult to drive and technically challenging, like they were in the 1950s.
but if it's stuff that is, you know, that's progressive and it's stuff that's within your control to deal with, then that's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with having cars that are difficult to drive because they're, you know, they're a bit of a technical challenge, because the judgments you have to make about just exactly what inputs you're giving to the steering, the brake and the accelerator, you know, have to be very finely judged. That's fine. We want that. What we don't want is cars that are difficult to drive, because when you're doing exactly what you did the lap before, the car unexpectedly flips out on you and spins you off the track. That is not...
And there's a reason...
That's not challenging. That's just a lottery for the driver.
But there's a reason for that. I'm going to tell you an analogy story again. Not swimming this time, but me on my first day in high school in Ysgol Glanclwyd in Llanelwy, St Asaph, North Wales.
That's easy for you to say.
What was it, 1972? I was 11. It was that, I think. And the bell goes in the middle of the afternoon at half past two or something like this. So I go running out of the lesson. I go running out into the playground. There's no one else there. We used to have an afternoon break in primary school. And I just, maybe I didn't read the timetable or I hadn't learned how these things work. But I embarrassed myself by running out and expecting a play time in the afternoon. Oh, no. Right. You make your mistakes early. And I think both those mistakes, Piastri and Max Verstappen's mistakes, weren't actually down to the driver. They were down to mistakes in the early understanding of the system and the writing of the code and the settings. It's like when you and Izog set up a gate or a level on a mic, right? When you first get the equipment, you realise, it creates these pops, so I've got to come down a bit. They're still adjusting the butter into shape. I think this stuff will go away by large. Remember, this is the first race with these cars. First ever time they've been challenged against each other.
You know, one of the things I noticed here was, again, the reliability
of the
cars. You know, this was the first race with the new regulations, the craziest, you know, enormous number of changes that we've got. And 17 including Lance Stroll, finished the race, I think is incredible.
Yeah, I was predicting 11, I think, a couple of episodes ago. Yeah, they did well. I think you said, they'll be sorted by then. And you were right, I was wrong, and I'm happy.
Yeah, no, I agree. The I read somewhere, I can't remember where it was, but somebody had compared this race to the first race after a previous big rule change when, 10 or 11 cars had failed to finish the first race under another big rule change, and so
they did
actually
well.
They did very well.
But I think Ferrari were thinking a bit more pessimistically, like me. One of the reasons that they didn't pit under the early safety cars is they were confident they were going to get another one later on, probably because of reliability issues. Someone's going to break down, something's going to go wrong. We'd started to see a few being lost at that stage, and they were banking on it too. I mean, ultimately, that decision wasn't optimum, but it mercifully may not have made any change to their final racing positions because the Mercedes were so far ahead. And I think Fred Vasseur was thinking, look, we're there. We're just going to hang on there, right? Wouldn't you?
I think you're right. I think they were, 15 seconds-ish ahead at the end. They probably could have been further ahead if they'd been really, really on it. If you've got a bit of a buffer, you might as well back off a little bit and save a little bit. So given that and the fact that the Ferraris would have had to go a long way on their hard tyres, whereas in fact what they were able to do in this race was use their tyres to the optimum by pitting at the best moment to get the best performance out of the mediums and the hards. I don't think that it would have made a difference to the result. But
I think you're probably right. I saw some interesting graphics looking at the average lap times of across the field. And, interestingly, the Ferraris and the Mercedes were very, very equal. They were really very, very close. Mm. Surprisingly close. But it looks as though that was largely related to the tyre strategy, and the fact that, as Zoggy said, Ferrari did have the optimal tyre strategy, so they had
an advantage
tyre performance. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you've got to make up for it in other ways, right? If you can't beat them on pace, you have to beat them on strategy or endurance or tyre wear or something. You've got to really, really dig deep. All right, we talked about the action on track. How about the other vibe over the weekend? One of the highlights for me was Bottas in the press conference on Thursday. Did you see that?
I did, yeah. He was, you got to love the Finnish sense of humour.
Yeah.
He was confidently predicting Aston Martin for the championship. With a straight face.
Stroll first. Oh, man, it warned me. He's very happy. He said it was the first time he was happy to be in an FIA press conference. He'd always been fed up of it, but now he's quite happy to be back. It was great. Love him. Also, do you fancy a Kit Kat, you two? There was Kit Kat advertising on many number of hoardings and corners at the circuit. Kit Kat have become a sponsor of Formula One. I know this because a friend of mine messaged me to say, you know, you can get Kit Kats in the shape of Lando Norris's car now and things like that, which I'm going to have to look into. I hope it's orange flavour or papaya flavour, perhaps. I can't wait. I'm going to find those. Yeah, Kit Kat everywhere. The one that I enjoyed most... You know, when you get the podium celebration at the end, you've got the podium with everybody underneath it, and then behind them, there's a camera tower, usually a bit of old scaffolding with all the photographers and the official TV coverage, TV cameras on there, so they can get eye-level shots of people on the podium. And it's usually a pretty scruffy thing. I don't know if you saw it this time, but it was wrapped up like a Kit Kat... that was half peeled. So the top half of it was chocolate and the lower half was emerging silver wrapping. A brilliant bit of design that was. Got my attention.
I've got to be honest, I missed that. I was a little bit in and out once the race finished. And so now good spot. But I like the idea. I like what you're describing there.
Any other stuff around the circuit that got your attention over the weekend?
Honestly, no. I was too... focused on, you know, I watched all of qualifying and the race and two of the three practice sessions. I wasn't watching enough of the build-up and the aftermath to pick up on any cool stuff, you know, celebrities on the grid, stuff that was going on around the circuit, to be honest. I was slacking.
I missed a lot of that because it was a middle of the night race. You know, because I watched it on delay, and the second I woke up, I came downstairs and very carefully turned the TV on just in case I was seeing the Sky News results of it. And then you spin to the start of the race straight away. You've got to turn the volume down,
and you've got to kind of hold your hand up so that you can only see the bottom left of the screen. So that you get
correct.
That, so you get
it
out and you get the watch from start. Yep, bing, that's what I want. Yep.
There must be a name for that manoeuvre. You know, like you've got the Picard manoeuvre where you readjust your jacket. There must be a name for this on delay manoeuvre. It's called the delay blinker, isn't it? That's what it is, the delay blinker.
Yeah.
Hey, one of the things that got my attention over the weekend, again, you know, not strictly about the racing, but the white wheels... on the, what are they called now? Racing Bulls. The Toro Rosso...
Racing Bulls V-Carb.
V-Carb Minardi, I'm going to call them. Because my cars have got solid wheels now. There are no vents in the wheels, which is fascinating. But the white treatment to these solid wheels on the Ford engine Racing Bull made it look like a kind of a Tickford Capri from the 80s. Remember that white Tickford Capri?
Or even
the wheels on the, was it the Peugeot 106 Rally?
With an E.
White wheels. And every time I look at it, wow, 80s, cool. And this whole thing about the wheels being solid now is because they're managing the airflow around the brakes differently because it's no longer a ground effect vehicle, so they're sealing off. I don't need more than this, but that's what's going on apparently. What else did I spot? Victory Travels in Louis Vuitton. Did you know that?
That was one thing. That was a nice bit of advertising placement. They've been doing that for a couple of years, though. They're not a new sponsor. I'm not particularly in the market for Louis Vuitton luggage at the moment, so I guess it's not really, you know, impinging too much on my content.
Who was the captain of HMS Victory?
Nelson.
Yeah, do you think Nelson wears Louis Vuitton then? Because Victory travels in Louis Vuitton, so Nelson must travel in Louis Vuitton when he's on the Victory. I don't know.
I mean, other takeaway, should say, Lindblad had a terrific debut.
Oh,
looks like he's...
the real thing.
Looks like the star that a lot of people say he is. That was, yeah, really solid. And, yeah, well, and Hadja in his first weekend is, you know, again, he's looking like the kind of backup for Verstappen that Red Bull haven't felt they've had for a couple of years.
I think he's my favourite of all the new drivers. I think Hadja, I've said this before, he wears his heart on his sleeve. He's really open, and I like that. And he's bloody quick, and he's not afraid of Max, but neither is Arvid Lindblad. And we saw that, didn't we?
Yeah, I know.
Arvid, I'm just going to hold Max behind, yeah.
Yeah, he was very...
good on him.
Yeah, and actually, of course, yes, Stevie did quite well to pick Lindblad as one of his drivers for the Fantasy F1 teams that we set up.
And
he picked as his sort of star driver to score double points, yeah, which worked out very well for him this weekend. So
right.
I've got a bit of catching up to do on the Fantasy F1.
Yeah, I didn't get into the Fantasy F1 thing. Just too complex for me. It would be another source of heartache for me. I'm completely immersed in the actual racing itself. But you know, Stevie, you may not know this, that when this podcast very first manifested, when Zog came round and ganged up on me with Violet and said, you're going to make a podcast, it's going to be called Gareth Jones on Speed and it's about cars, and I said, okay, what's a podcast? The whole structure, the initial idea for the concept of the show was based on fantasy football on TV, because I'm not interested in football, but I used to watch the TV show Fantasy Football because it was funny. I liked the content, I liked the guys doing it, and I felt that Gareth Jones on Speed could do something similar for motorsport, because there wasn't anything like this in existence 21 years ago when we started it. So thank you, Zog. Maybe we should have our own Fantasy Formula One thing within Gareth Jones on Speed, and that would give it a reason to talk about it on the show, right? And it'll give me a reason to follow it.
We may have left it a bit late for this year, if I'm being honest. But we can think about it next year.
Maybe we'll do it for the second half of the season or something like that.
So I'm sure we can get Indy to do the necessary programming. He'd be able to knock it off in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Very smart chap that he is.
That's number two son, Indigo Jones, who has been teaching me about logic this week. He's got a degree in mathematics, and he's trying to share some of that with me. And my God,
logic, the thinking process, or logic, the Apple OS X software?
Not the Apple OS X software, but basically the logic, which is the foundation of all computer code based on mathematics.
Very good, Boolean logic and all that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and it's way beyond this poor Welsh brain, but I'm trying. I'm sort of with him. Other bits we might have to mention over the weekend. We talked about Formula One. Did you guys have a minute to watch any F2 over the weekend?
I saw there was a big crash.
There was a lot of it. F2, right? There's always crashes. But for me, I'm watching F2 because Colton Herter is racing for High Tech, and in the two races we've had so far, the sprint race and the feature race, I think he finished 16th in the sprint race, but he finished 6th in the feature race. And I'm interested because this is a measure. You know, we often get drivers going the other way, but drivers coming from IndyCar to F2, how good are they? Let's find out. Are those skills transferable? Now, it seems to work the other way, because Mick Schumacher, in his only second race in IndyCar, has been describing driving an IndyCar like driving an F2 car, but with better tyres, is what he said. I think they're quite agricultural, even compared to F2 cars. They're pretty heavy. They're built to survive big crashes, aren't they? But I was pleased Mick started third on the grid at Phoenix in a short oval. But he just went backwards and went backwards. I think he finished about 16th or something like that in the end. But, you know, he didn't hit the wall when even the current champion hit the wall. But if you're not watching IndyCar, please watch, because I saw something in IndyCar I've never seen before. Who was it? Was it Hauge banging along the home straight, and a car comes up behind him, and although the car doesn't make contact, it affects the airflow at the rear of the car so significantly that the rear end of the leading car goes light and he spins. And the car does 180 degrees, at which point the driver lifts off the throttle and carries on going backwards at over 150 miles per hour for almost the entire length of the start-finish straight before cleverly, when all the cars had gone past him, hitting full opposite lock into a J-turn, slams it in gear and picks up and carries on. It was the most... Was it Dennis Hauger? Was that his name? If you haven't seen it, it's worth seeing. It defies belief that such things can happen. I recommend IndyCar.
I'm going to look for that later. That does sound spectacular. But I've just got a question. I mean, that does sound kind of unlikely to me, that the car immediately behind the vehicle that had the spin... That the following vehicle can affect the airflow over the rear wing enough that it's going to break the rear end loose? Is that really what happened?
I believe so.
I've got to be
they didn't make contact. I mean, remember that they are almost always turning, and they're in vehicles that are set up asymmetrically. Vehicles which have positive cant on one side and negative cant on the other side of the front wheels. They have different tyre pressures on the outside to the inside, and so the cars tend to crab when they're going in a straight line. They're set up to go straight in a corner. And I think that sensitivity, aligned with a change of rear pressure on one half of the rear wing, caused it to go into a spin. That's how it's explained by the commentators, who are Indy drivers. Oh yeah, the wind just picked him up there for the trailing car. Okay, I believe you. Outrageous bit of sport on television that was. It was great.
I want to look into that, because you know, the car behind is entirely in the, you know, the dirty air that's coming off that leading vehicle. Mm. You know, can you really? I don't know.
The cars running on a short oval weren't running on the lightweight front and rear wings that they wear on the super speedways. They had full front and rear wings, which are, you know, pretty substantial. So there would have been a lot of wake coming off the rear of that car.
Sure.
Similarly, the trailing car, the lead wing of the trailing car, would have been kicking stuff up. And they were, I mean, when I say close, that close, but they did not touch. They were occupying the same warp bubble, I'd say.
I wonder, or maybe there's some effect that has to do with, you know, wind at the track, and maybe the following vehicle is sort of somehow blocking,
maybe,
you know, it's affecting the wind that would otherwise be hitting the leading vehicle. And I don't know.
Well, you know, if you throw a balloon at the back of a truck, that balloon will follow the truck. It will sit just off the rear.
It sits in the turbulent air, and that's sort of
pulled
low
along
pressure.
By the lower pressure.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. But the idea that the front wing of the following car is going to be affecting the downforce on the rear. We've talked about this enough, because we clearly don't know what we're talking about, and I'm just sort of saying this doesn't sound right to me. To be investigated, to be researched.
Indeed, yeah. Watch more IndyCar, that's my advice. Watch more F2. Right, we've got China coming. Stevie, what do you think?
More of the same. Just more of the same. I think, I think Mercedes are going to dominate again. But I was so pleased with Ferrari's performance. Think about, you know, that launch off the start line of both was just amazing. So exciting. They didn't run the spinny rear wing, though. That was disappointing.
That was disappointing. I'm holding out for that in a few races' time. Maybe even Monza.
Later in the season, maybe.
Great.
Well, we'll see. But yeah, great starts. Lando got a pretty good launch, though, to be fair.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Ferrari that were off the line like a rocket. Yeah, let's hope for more of that in China, and maybe a closer race at the front. Let's see.
Okay, my hopes for China. Lewis to finish in front of Leclerc. That Aston to operate at some kind of velocity. It isn't going to happen because they haven't got spares. I want Piastri to have a good weekend to make up for his disappointment as his home race. And I want Isaac Hadjar to get on the podium. I think he deserves it. That's what I want. That's what I hope for. But hope springs eternal. And in the theme of spring, this is a kind of a the next race or any race now, it's more of a harvest festival than anything, isn't it? They're harvesting and deploying. They plough the fields and scatter.
Very good.
All that. But yeah, okay, one final thing. The very best name of any motor racing driver I have ever encountered. He's in Formula 2 at the moment. He's Thai. And his name is, in my view, the Thai equivalent of Llanfair Pwllgwyng Gellwgerwyll Llansysilio Bryn Broglis Ogogoch. You know, something that is so difficult to remember that it becomes memorable. His name is Tasanapol Inthrap Huvasak. Isn't that a great name? Tasanapol Inthrap Huvasak. I come from a planet known as Thailand.
It's a fine name, but if you're ranking it in terms of, you know, great racing driver names of all time, Scott Speed is surely it's not close to Scott Speed.
Or Emerson Fittipaldi, if you're not that Emerson Fittipaldi, because in Formula 2 at the moment you've got Emerson Fittipaldi Junior, born 20 years ago to his dad when he was 59, I think. And you've also got Colton Herta, son of Brian Herta, and Sebastian Montoya.
Okay, a little Montoya. Oh, I died. But hey, a baby Montoya sounds good. Love when Pablo.
Yeah, we loved him. He's been there a couple of years, Sebastian. And he's pretty good, but he's having a good season so far. He's doing all right. So, yeah, watch more motorsport, watch more F2, watch more IndyCar, and I'm sure we'll talk again. Stevie, thank you so much for coming on the programme once again. It's great having you here.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you for asking me. I love it.
We're going to rest you from the next show because we're going to give F1 a little bit of a gap to have Alex back on the show so we don't bore him to death about Formula One. But Stevie, can we invite you back again in a few races time?
Anytime. I'm here.
Excellent.
Fantastic. Excellent. And Zoggy, I take it you'll be there.
Of course.
Top man. We're going to leave you with a tune, a song I write every year for the opening race of the season. This is F1's Back 2026 Electronic Mix. See ya. Say bye, boys.
Bye-bye.
Bye, boys.
F1's back for 2026. Half of which is engine, the other half's electric. Cadillac attack the F1 grid. Faster than an Aston, but still pretty mid. F1's back. Audi did okay. Started on the mission, running rings around the competition. Welcome to the hood, Arvid Lindblad. Is he any good? He ain't half bad. Nicer to have Batty Bottas back. Honda have a problem they're gonna fix later. They haven't built an engine but a green vibrator. Ferrari look impressive. Lewis has a smile, but they're behind Mercedes by a racing mile. Brainy Bolting, Bambri and Brixford built a brilliant bow. Now they'll pull back on their drawstring and let their silver arrows go.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.